Welcome to Historical Jesus. I'm Mark Vinette. Longtime atheist Richard Dawkins' remarkable confession that he is a cultural Christian has Christian apologists scratching their heads, including Dinesh D'Souza and Frank Turek.
Longtime atheist Richard Dawkins and his remarkable confession that he is a cultural Christian. I want to talk in depth with Christian apologist Frank Turek.
This is something that Dawkins actually has been saying for quite a while now. My job is to try and show people that Christianity is indeed true, and we maintain the values of Christianity.
You can't really have a cultural revival without having a moral and a spiritual revival, because you can't have the flower without the root, and without the branch, and without the source of nourishment. So people talk about the fact we need to fix our culture, and it's true, there are some things you can do in the policy realm and perhaps in the cultural realm, but in the end, isn't it a fact that we need to restore the core belief of the West under God, or as Jefferson says, our rights come from the Creator, and without that kind of root, no long-term cultural reform is even possible. Do you agree?
Richard Dawkins at least admitting that despite the fact he doesn't think Christianity is true, he is pointing out that it brings forth great benefits to civilization. Now, we need to also point out that this doesn't mean in the past that Christians have acted morally all the time. We haven't. Christians in the past have engaged in things that disagree with what Jesus taught. But that's the illogical outworking of Christianity. The logical outworking of atheism, it's survival of the fittest. If I've got more power and you're in my way, I can kill you to get what I want.
Let's dive into the provocative idea that atheism, no less than Christianity, requires faith. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, because it sort of hits the atheist at a vulnerable point. The atheist typically thinks that the Christian is living by faith, which is to say living by irrationality, believing things that can't be supported, can't be proven, baseless statements. On the other hand, the atheist thinks, well, I'm not like that. My positions are all based on reason. And so, do you think it is in fact true that the atheist position, and perhaps the agnostic position, maybe you can distinguish those two if they need to be distinguished, do those positions rely on faith? And what is the faith that it takes to be an atheist? What is it that they have to have faith in?
Well, if we're using faith in the modern sense, which is if you don't have evidence, you just believe blindly, maybe even against the evidence, Dinesh. In fact, that's how Richard Dawkins has put it. I think the atheists have to have a lot more faith than Christians. Why? Because there's very good evidence that New Testament writers were recording accurately what they observed. And if that's the case, then Christianity is true. Whereas the atheists have to believe against the evidence, for example, that the universe popped into existence out of nothing and by nothing. Well, that's an extraordinary claim, and you need extraordinary evidence. They'll say that all the time. But here they are, Dinesh, atheists admitting that space, time, and matter had a beginning out of nothing, and they're saying that it happened without a cause. Lawrence Krauss says this in his book, A Universe from Nothing. He says the whole universe came into existence without a cause. Now, that is an extraordinary claim, Dinesh. And yet, do they have extraordinary evidence for it? No, in fact, they have absolutely no evidence for it. In fact, there's evidence against it, because the fundamental law of science is every effect has a cause and the universe is an effect. So what's the evidence that it came into existence without a cause? There isn't any. They're violating their own principle. So if space, time, and matter had a beginning without a cause, as Richard Dawkins admits, as Stephen Hawking admitted, then whatever created space, time, and matter must transcend space, time, and matter. In other words, the cause must be spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful to create the universe out of nothing, personal in order to choose to create, and also intelligent to have a mind to create. So I always ask people, when you think about a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, personal, intelligent cause, who do you think of? That's what we mean by God.
And isn't it true also that the universe embodies and reflects a deep, intelligible order? If it didn't, it wouldn't take the most brilliant minds of all time, going back to the early scientists and then, of course, Galileo, Newton, ultimately Einstein, the people who were involved in the quantum, all these guys, geniuses, trying to ferret out the secrets of nature, the laws that are hidden, the hidden program or code of the universe. Now, we don't know of any code that can be generated without a coder. In other words, somebody has to program the code. Where do we get the code from? How does the electron know what to do? So you have an explanation that would seem to posit that this order couldn't exist by itself. What does the atheist say about that?
Well, what they try and say is we live in a multiverse, and this universe happens to be the one that looks designed, but it really isn't. To which Paul Davies, who is an agnostic astronomer at Arizona State University, said, the multiverse is a dodge. The universe looks designed because it is designed. Imagine positing, multiplying your possibilities because you can't answer the obvious question that if we have a code, there must be a coder. If there is design, there must be a designer. They say, oh, no, there's no designer. This all happened by chance. We're just going to multiply the universes out there and try and say that the one we're in just happens to be the one that looks designed, even though it really isn't. This just proves too much, because if there's all these universes out there, that means every possible contingency out there is actual. According to this theory, it just proves too much. So they're really grasping at straws to try and say there is no designer when you look at the incredible complexity, not only of the design of life, but the design of the universe itself. In fact, Hawking said this, despite being an atheist, he said, if the expansion rate of the universe was different by one part in 1,000,000,000,000, a second after the Big Bang, the universe would have collapsed back on itself or never developed galaxies. So if the universe expansion rate from the very beginning was that infinitesimally different, none of us would be here. Now, what makes more sense? That expansion rate just happened without a cause, or that expansion rate was designed to be precisely where it needed to be? Seems to me B is the better answer.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Let me put it slightly differently, or just rephrase what you said, because I think it's so important. What you're saying is that the universe is not just designed in the obvious sense that if you or I were to find a watch, we would be like, that's designed. Well, that's true. You're saying that the design is at such a fantastic level of calibration that the probability that it could have been assembled by chance is essentially zero.
Yes,
and the atheists are coming along and saying, well, that's actually true. We can't deny that. So why don't we posit or imagine that there isn't just one universe. There are millions of universes. In fact, there's an infinity of universes. And since there's an infinity of universes, really all combinations are going to be realized somewhere. It's like saying if you keep rolling the dice millions and millions of times, you're bound to get even the most improbable combination of numbers because you have an infinity to keep trying. Which is easier, to believe in one invisible God or an infinity of invisible universes for which there is no evidence whatsoever?
And this is exactly why Christopher Hitchens said this is the hardest argument to answer if you're an atheist. Why is the universe fine-tuned? Why does life exist? Why do the natural laws, why are they so persistent and consistent? Laws come from lawgivers, and the laws that govern this particular universe, as far as we know, that's all we have, are so precise and consistent that this points back to some sort of mind. In fact, people say, well, how do you know that God exists? I say this, we know God by his effects. If there's a creation, that's an effect. We're reasoning back to a cause, a creator. If there's design, that's the effect. We're reasoning back to a cause, a designer. If there's a moral law written on our hearts, that's the effect. We're reasoning back to a moral law giver. If there's evidence that a man predicted and accomplished his own resurrection from the dead, that's the effect. We're reasoning back to a cause. Who could have caused a man to predict and accomplish his own resurrection? That would be God. So we're reasoning from effect to cause, and this is what scientists do. Scientists are always looking for what particular cause caused a particular effect. And I'm saying that if you're not a theist of some kind, you're ignoring cause and effect. You're not being scientific.
At one point, C.S. Lewis, who relies on the argument from the moral law to the moral lawgiver, that's the essence of the argument in Mere Christianity, Lewis's perhaps most famous book. At one point, Lewis intimates, he doesn't say explicitly, but he intimates that the knowledge of God has been implanted in every human heart. In other words, even the agnostic who says, I don't know, really does know. The atheist who says, no, there is no God, knows that there is a God. The suggestion here is that these are positions that are, I won't say held in bad faith, but I will say that are motivated by something else. So in other words, I found that when you prod an atheist enough, you sometimes find that it's not so much that they don't believe in God, but they've got a beef with God. They're angry with God. They've got a grudge with God. And you got the feeling about that from Dawkins as well, because his book is so unremittingly hostile, or as people say these days, hateful toward God, that it's not a normal reaction to something that you just don't believe exists. We can talk about the fact that unicorns don't exist or aliens don't exist, but we don't have active hostility to the unicorns and the aliens. We just don't think they exist. But the active hostility of the atheist, it seems to be a kind of a giveaway. Do you agree?
Yeah, that's why I always ask people on college campuses, if Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? And sometimes the atheists at the microphone in front of hundreds of people will say, no, no. How is it you claim to be reasonable and you won't believe something that were true? Because it's not about the head, it's about the heart. They don't want it to be true. They don't want there to be a God. Why? Because they want to be God over their own lives. They're not on a truth quest, they're on a happiness quest. So I always ask them, if Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? And many times they hesitate or say no. In fact, in my second debate with Christopher Hitchens, I said, you can sum up Christopher Hitchens' position in one sentence. There is no God and I hate him. But God thinks there is a Christopher Hitchens and I love him. In fact, I died for him. And that's really where Christianity goes. Christianity is all about God coming into this world, adding humanity to his deity, taking the punishment that the creatures he created deserve. He took their punishment on himself. And then by trusting in him, we can not only be forgiven, but we can be given his righteousness. Now, that is a great story, and it happens to be true, and yet people resist it. It's not really about the evidence for God's existence, Dinesh. It's about the evidence for their resistance that seems quite palpable, as you pointed out. Nobody writes the unicorn delusion, but Richard Dawkins writes the God delusion.
And what you're saying is that even if Christianity were true, they still prefer to go their own way instead of God's way. In other words, if Christianity were true, it follows that the creator who made you obviously has a better plan for your life than you could devise on your own. And that's yet, right. The atheist, the rebel, says, no, even if Christianity is true, I've got my own way figured out better, and I want to operate independently of God. I don't want to be under the scrutiny and the sovereignty of God. I want to go it my own way. I mean, I think part of the beauty of Dante's Divine Comedy, he takes the atheist at his own word, and he goes, okay, if you want to go your own way, that's how you end up far away from God, which is another definition of the word hell. God is essentially granting your wish. God is giving you your choice to be really far away from him.
That's right. That's what it is. Separation from God. God's not going to force anybody into heaven against their will.
I don't have enough faith to be an atheist.
I'm Mark Vinette. Thank you for sharing your time with me. Doctors endorse it, nutritionists recommend it, and customers love it. Calotrin Healthy Weight Loss. Ron in Texas lost 35 pounds. Marie in Pennsylvania lost 117 pounds with Calotrin. Diane not only lost weight, but she also found relief from arthritis. Lynn lost over 45 pounds. Calotrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calotrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calotrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, take advantage of their President's Day sale. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY to the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer. Again, text HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605.